at least for the author, when the interviewers actually read the book.
You're such a good interviewer, my gosh. You really made me think. You really read the book. Yeah.
No other interviewer has really gotten into that. You really brought out some really great points.
Greg Berg holds the morning show weekdays after the 8 o'clock news, only on WGTD. This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, Chuck Wolbers, a special education teacher with Kenosha Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students Program, and Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW-Oshkosh. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning, and welcome to Education Matters. My name is Mike Kehoe. I'm one of the rotating hosts. And I have three guests with me today. We're going to be talking about the dual language programs. And what I like to do is have each of you introduce yourselves. That way the audience will be able to associate the name with the voice and maybe state what your connection with dual language programs are.
Hi, good morning. My name is Javier Ramos. I come from Spain, and I'm a teacher in English in Spain in a dual system.
My name is Nicole Aquino, and I am from Kenosha, and I am a dual language teacher at Bullen Middle School. I teach social studies and Spanish, and I've also had family members go through the dual language program.
I'm Courtney Zapp, and I was a student in the dual language program for KUSD. I went to KUSD Elementary School and Bullen Middle School.
About 18 months ago, we did a program on the dual language program at Bullen Middle School, and because of circumstances on that day, we were cut to 19 minutes by a opera broadcast, and so we never really finished that program to our satisfaction. We all had things we felt we wanted to say about dual language. We all feel very strongly about it, and Courtney was a member of the panel at that time.
Yes, I remember.
Yes, and you were very enthusiastic at that point. Courtney has worked as my intern here a couple of times, and that program was one of them. So why don't we start out this way, Courtney? As we ended that program, what might have been on your mind that you think we didn't cover?
Something I definitely would like to talk about more, because actually I'm currently going through it, is the importance and the value I've gotten out of the dual language program even after coming out of it, because I'm currently going into my junior year at Carthage College here in Kenosha, and I have a minor in Spanish right now, and I actually just got back from a trip to Guatemala, a language immersive trip, and just how much being in the dual language program like helped me be more comfortable somewhere else, and things about the dual language program that just tend to continue to help you not only educationally, but as a person, because I feel like I wouldn't have been nearly as prepared or as happy with my trip. And just in regular day-to-day interactions, the things that I took away from the dual language program are so much more than just education.
Okay, can you describe briefly for us what you see as the continuity between what you are experiencing now, what you've benefited from, and the program itself? And by the way, for all of you here, feel free to speak up at any point in this. I don't like to turn these sessions into Q&A meetings. So you're all motivated towards this program at any point. If you have something you want to say, go ahead. Go ahead, Courtney.
Sounds good. Well, I feel like, especially going into the cultural aspect of it, like being in the dual language program, it's not just a bunch of one ethnicity of children going into the program. There's Hispanic children, there's African American children, there's Caucasian children. They're all together and they're learning from each other. And I remember saying before in my last time I was here talking about the dual language program about how many quinceañeras I got to go to and how much I got the experience of a different culture. Not even, I wasn't learning just a new language. I was learning a new culture and a new group of people. And they were my friends, my peers. And I feel like it was something, it's really a great representation of a melting pot. And I feel like where there tends to be more of like, people tend to go towards like minds, especially in like middle school and going into high school. I found that going into the dual language program, you were able to have this wonderful mix, and it was so comfortable. And in a way, it felt like we always called it our dual language family because we were so connected. And I don't know if it is, I doubt it has changed over the years, but I bet Ms. Aquino can attest to this continuing on.
Definitely. I was actually going to say, I think another great thing is that you guys are together for 9 years. So you have that idea of the sense of comfort. And like you said, it's a family.
Yeah.
So by the time you really get to middle school, you understand each other, you get to know each other, and it's not so scary to take risks anymore.
Yes, and it's really amazing because going into high school, we all went our separate ways. But Kenosha is a relatively small town, so I see people. Just the other day, I saw Philip's older sister, who I went to Bullen Middle School with. I saw her at the gas station the other day, and she was like, oh yeah, Philip talked about you, and I'll tell him you're doing well. And it's all these amazing connections. You're not just, like I always said, I sound like a broken record at this point, but you're not just learning a language, you're learning how to connect with other people that you might not if you didn't have this opportunity.
Javier, what was your, you were a dual language student first before you became
my,
a teacher.
Yeah, let me just go back a little bit into my, I don't know if it sounds to be too important here, but my life. I come from the Basque Country, which is between Spain and France, up in the north of Spain. And my parents are not born native speakers of Basque, but I was raised in the school system, dual school system, where I was taught the Basque language, which is, by the way, the oldest still spoken language in Europe. My wife speaks the language natively, but I was taught in the school the language. And my parents were kind of afraid at the beginning of putting me in a dual program because they would not be able to help me maybe when the, you know, I grew older and I had these language or mathematics problems to be translated. They wouldn't know how to do it. So they were kind of afraid, but they went for it, and I was very glad that they did. At 8th grade, in my educational system at that time, you could only choose high school in Spanish or in Basque. I was born in a, I was raised in an educational system that was half bilingual. I would take half of the subjects in Spanish and the other half in Basque. But at the high school point, I had to take a choice, make a choice of Spanish or Basque. I was actually the only member of my 25 members class that decided to go for the Basque, 100% Basque. And nowadays, all my friends belong to the that class that I met in the first year of high school, where I was the only one that wasn't kind of 100% native Basque speaker. You know, it's helped me all my life, and it's helped me when I was learning English too. And I went taking Latin and Greek, classic languages. So, you know, that was the beginning of my Basque immersion program. And as you said before, like meeting some of the people from that class that were like a family, because in my school there were 4 classes at the same level when I was in the bilingual program, and there was only 1 class that was bilingual. The 3 others were the only Spanish. And so our 25 members of that class, we were our own family kind of a thing. Like, so we kept in touch for a long time, and we do remember that as a very emotional time. And again, you know, as Nicole was saying here, the emotions of feeling comfortable in a family kind of atmosphere does make a difference, I think. And the fact that at least at that point that we were a small group helped us a lot in mm-hmm. the process of learning.
And I like that you mentioned a little bit earlier when you were talking about how language acquisition becomes easier the more languages you learned.
Yeah, it
That's
does.
Definitely something mm-hmm. I've noticed as well. It's a lot easier. I can pick up on Italian or the different dialects. Portuguese is difficult, but I can pick it apart. Yeah. I'd like to think that if I were dropped into Portugal one day, I would be able to make it out of there easily.
Actually, that's helped me as a teacher too, because I've been learning the three different languages well, I now use that when I'm teaching my students. The difficulties I went through when I learned the languages, I can compare and use the different grammatical aspects of one or the other and point at them. In my school, we teach subjects in Basque, in Spanish, and in English. So whenever I have to explain something, for example, the age, how to say how old are you in English or in Spanish, the verb we use is different. I am 20 years old or tengo 20 años, which would be translated as I have 20 years. Now, in Basque, which the kids learn a little bit earlier than English, because of the society, you do say it the English way, so to say. So when I have to explain my kids in English how to say how old are you, how many years do you have, I just go to Basque and say, hey, this is just like Basque. It's not more difficult, it's not more different, it's just like Basque. It's the Basque way, so to say. So that makes them learn it faster and easier. So it kind of puts bridges over the learning of languages. And it's good for teachers too, if you have been through those learning difficulties, you know where to stop and spend some time with your kids to make sure that that part is covered properly. Because mm-hmm. you went through those difficulties as a learner before being a teacher as well.
That's really great. And I liked what you said earlier about I had the exact same experience in elementary and middle school where half of the classes were in Spanish and half of them were in English. I remember learning chemistry in Spanish. That was quite difficult at the beginning, but I feel like that's also very important to not just go to a Spanish class to learn the language, but you have some sort of context to the language at that point when you have some kind of core class like chemistry. I learned how to say the different chemicals in these languages, and I learned scientific terms and math in that language. Like you said, your parents worry about being able to translate to Basque or anything like that. Being able to not just take a Spanish class, but to be able to have that opportunity really helps widen the amount of vocabulary you have and normalize the language in a way, which I think really helped me when I was in Guatemala because it was just conversational. We stayed in a village where nobody spoke English, and if they did, not very much. So it was incredibly helpful to have a conversational grasp of the language rather than the official, let me think about the subjunctive or something like that, learning just how to talk regularly. And that's also how it really helped to have students who were also native Spanish speakers or had family members that are native Spanish speakers, because it was normal to have a conversation in Spanish. So
now, you mentioned before that in your class, and it's true, I think I can see a clear differences here between Spain and the part of Europe where I live and probably most of Europe, that the USA, it is a real melting pot when it comes to ethnics and groups in the class. Europe, I think, had that experience many, many years before. So now, for example, in my school area, we might not have that problem of having a mixed group of ethnics, and people might be learning at different levels and stuff. It's quite a homogeneous group what we have in Europe. But it's a learning for learning kind of a thing. It's learning for progress or learning for learning the language. It's going to be good for your future. So there are other aspects that we are dealing with more than the ethnic and, integration and social differences. It's not the case there, I guess, in Europe, or at least in the part of Europe where I live. People there, parents are usually worried, as my parents were. Now in my school, that is a trilingual school, I get parents that don't speak English, but the kid studies science in English. So they'll go to the internet and download all this information in Spanish and makes them re-explains the homework to the kid in Spanish. So the kids get stressed because he cannot do it maybe properly well in English, but he gets frustrated because he cannot really do it properly with the parents on. So, my kid is not learning. It's the problem of the language. And usually it's just kind of the tension that is in the atmosphere of learning that we should keep just down too. It's like, if the kid doesn't understand the lesson when he's doing the homework at home, don't worry. Just send me a message in the agenda. I will sit down with him 5 minutes and make sure that he learns it. But the parents don't have to get stressed because of that. And I will encourage all the Hispanics or any other nationalities or ethnics in the States that are thinking about putting their kids into a dual or non-dual program to do it, because it's going to give them knowledge of culture, friends, and it's going to give them another world of, you know, a vision of the world. So whenever they see news on the newspaper or they watch TV or listen to music, they can learn many, many other things that are not, as you said before, it's not only just one language for communicative reasons, but it's also all the culture that goes behind it.
I'm kind of going with your point of when the parents do get stressed out because they don't know the language.
They do.
One of the nice things, especially from our older groups in DL, is there's that community with their parents, too. And a lot of the parents, even though they don't speak the same language, have that same desire to want their kids to learn both languages, and they'll use the other parents to help. So perhaps one class is in English, and the English-speaking parent is willing to tutor a child, and the Spanish-speaking parent is willing to tutor the other child in a different subject.
Yeah.
So that helps a lot, and then the kids will help each other. If the kid's stronger in English, they might help.
That's a benefit part that I see in there. It's like the kids help more the other kids in these dual programs. They have the necessity for doing that for their own benefit and the benefit of the group. So whereas in a normal class, so to say, each kid is just worried about his own problems.
Mm-hmm.
But because at some point they will have problems learning the other language, the other is going to have problems learning the other person's language. So in that way, they're building bridges from both sides of the river. And so at some point of the river, they cross. Or you can get two bridges done at the same time. So
it's like playing on each other's strength to be able to have a truly strong foundation here when there's people that are specializing in different things. It's very similar to any kind of company. You have people that are specializing in different departments, and if everybody has their own specialty and then they work together, it has a complete picture.
That's an encyclopedia of knowledge kind of a thing.
Yes, exactly. And another thing I'd like to point out, especially about families in dual language, is especially here, I've noticed that if there's more than one child in the family, every child will go through the dual language program, and there's that almost like a lineage of dual language. Both of my sisters, I have two younger sisters, and both when they come in, one of the first things is, oh, you must be Courtney's younger sister. And there's this sense of community and this continual legacy of dual language. And I come in and I say hello. I know my younger sister's friends, and I see them, and even then they're still like family to me. I'm like, oh, I went to school with your older brother or something like that. And it's just, it's unlike any experience I've ever had in my life, and I'm incredibly grateful to have been able to been given that experience and that opportunity, because I feel like not very many people get that opportunity, and I feel like it's so important. It's almost integral at this point to have something like that.
Yeah. In the world we live in as well, I mean, now in the end you can be working for a company that sends you abroad. I mean, and that would open just so many opportunities for that person. Not only that, but also, you know, the emotional part. I have had families who didn't, you know, I know people that are English born and in Spain, and they are raising the kid without speaking to them in English, just in Spanish. And I was saying, how come? Like, how can you go back to your Scotland with your parents and the kid is not going to be able to understand the grandparents? I found that such a big missing gap there in the family, and how the kid is going to be feeling about his grandparents not being able to understand them. So I would, you know, certainly encourage everybody to, if they have the chance, to put the kids under a dual program.
Something you mentioned, Courtney, it reminded me of something that I had forgotten, and that is that not only are cultural barriers broken between the students, and students benefit from that, but families, particularly families who may be recent immigrants and so on, or people who have had no contact with families like that, they're going to find barriers disappearing between them, between the adults, the parents of the children, which is something that is certainly vital in our family.
Yes, it's really amazing.
Our family is a nation.
Mm-hmm. It's really amazing to see all these families come together and parents help each other out. I know my mother's helped people out and vice versa when we need anything. If we needed somebody, something even as simple as, oh, I can't pick up Courtney from Hermanitas or something like that, which is an after-school program, and we'll have several mothers or fathers jump in immediately and be like, oh, of course, you know, she's like one of ours. And it's like how the students are a community itself, and like Miss Aquino said, it's the family and the parents have their own community as well. It's, we care about each other and we take care of each other, and it's so incredibly unlike anything I've ever seen in any experiences I've had since then. It's really odd to me. People will say, I'll talk to people in college right now or even in high school, and they were like, yeah, middle school was, I didn't have very many friends and I just didn't really connect with anyone. I just kind of wanted to get out there. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I loved going to school because I had this family that I could trust, and if I'm having a hard time, I know that somebody will be there for me, and everybody is looking out for each other, and we all care about each other. It's just this incredibly deep connection, and it almost makes me sad that people don't have this opportunity.
Yeah, as you were talking, I was thinking, you know, Courtney was in third grade. I was at Edward Bean School of Language and Art when we first met, and Courtney had a pretty good level of self-confidence back then, but it has been interesting to watch how you and your sister Jessica, who was also in that that class, the morning news announcements and the other things that we did, how your confidence and has grown, and it's not confidence in the sense that you would we think of when we're watching the network coverage of the conventions, for example. Not that kind of confidence. It's just a feeling of at ease that you have, that you bring to every situation that you're in.
In a way, being in the dual language program and being put into an opportunity to learn more about other people that are unlike me and therefore learning about myself, in a way, I've learned to fit in with any group, in a way. I've learned to adjust, be more culturally sensitive, be more sensitive about myself and others in general. And I feel as though it's almost as if the list of opportunities I have and the benefits I've had are almost endless. I could probably be writing for hours about it. I'm just so grateful. Whenever I think about it, I just get so almost choked up, because I feel like I would definitely not be the person I am today. And I'd like to say I'm proud of the person I am today, and I owe a lot of that to being in the dual language program and being able to have these connections and to reach a level of understanding that I feel like I would be missing otherwise.
Now, have you ever thought how your life might have turned out differently if you had not made that decision to...
Certainly. I mean, I might probably not have been deciding to be a teacher, probably, because all my group of friends would have been different. My life would have been a completely different life. I took my PhD in English, and then, so it's just, I think it was all quite biased because of that, my personal experiences. You know, something I would like to say, too, is that sometimes, and I get this problem with the parents sometimes, blaming the trilingual system we have in the Basque Country for their children not being able to catch up with the subjects. They're failing. Oh, my kid is doing science in English. Maybe he did it in Spanish, he would pass, but he's failing because of the English language. And those parents come to us and, you know, say those things. And I turn around and say, look, you know, even if you're only in the Spanish system, just learning Spanish, there are people that fail the language class. So it's not only, you know, that they might be failing because of the science. Maybe there is something they're not getting there. So, you know, it's just they need some time, they need some help, and they got to make sure that we as teachers are there to help them, and they as students and parents come around and ask us and tell us that what's going on. But, you know, there is this famous sentence by a Spanish writer 100 years ago that said, sorry for the language, but even the most stupid person in England speaks English. So that's just... It's something that happens. I mean, and we, you know, it's not a fact that the language affects the learning if the learning comes to be effective. So it might be times when things go better and times when things go worse. But I think it's a part of the vision of the teacher to be there when things are going not properly, and also being there when the things are going very well, to congratulate them and to encourage them to keep going and helping other students. And I think that that's what, as you said, some of you said before, the emotions, the feelings, the family feeling, that is what helps in the end, you know, keeping together and being part of a same class, you know, belonging, actually. That's what it is, in my opinion.
In the work that I do at Bullen as a special education support person, I do a lot of direct instruction and spend a lot of time with students who need more time than they can get in the classroom. And you spent the morning with us over at Bullen, and you spent an hour with a young man who had been sitting looking at his social studies book, The History of Greece.
Yeah, for a while.
But then when you sat down next to him, which was just came naturally to you, he obviously started paying attention to things and seemed more comfortable and was smiling towards the end of it and seemed to have accomplished anything. I'm wondering, is there more direct instruction, more of this, more time with parent and with student and teacher together? Is that something that is common to dual language programs? Is that an essential part of the way that it's approached?
I would say it's less direct instruction from the teacher and actually more from other students. Because we still do have larger class sizes, and some are 25-plus students. But the difference is, usually, if there's one student that seems to be struggling, there's five other students willing to help them out that are going to notice that and go over and be like, hey, did you need help with this? I finished it. Maybe I can help you. So that way, even if the teacher doesn't notice everything, the kids are very aware of one another.
That's something I like about my school now. The school where I teach, we have the kids sitting at tables that are groups of four. So many times they have this task that has to be carried out by them, and they are the ones that have to organize the way they do the tasks. For example, we give them text with gaps, and they have to find that gap in the textbook or find the information on the internet, and they have to coordinate who's going to write the paper, who's going to find the information, who's going to... So, and that way, learning from a learner, learning from another student, helps them a lot, rather than being with a teacher backup in everything, and that makes them feel more comfortable too. So our, you know, my task there sometimes is just monitoring and making sure that they're working on what they have to work, rather than controlling if the information is right or wrong, which we do right at the end of the whole process. And I really, really like the fact that they are working, the four sitting together under a table, right by the table, and they have the tasks that are settled. And when I was learning, it didn't work like that. It was my individual table and chair, and you know, the teacher would speak and read and do everything, and the kids would just maybe write down and complete the information individually. But in my school now, we do it this way, and I think that it's a very good way of doing it.
I agree completely, especially talking about how when I was there, that students always would always look to help each other and to bring each other up, and It's all about everybody bringing each other up. That being said, it was also never a thought, like an uncomfortable thought, or never an idea to hesitate when wanting to ask a teacher about something. There was still that comfort of having a teacher nearby, even though it would be less hands-on. In a way, it's almost a better opportunity for learning, and it also gives the opportunity for the students to go up to the teacher, not vice versa. In a way, being able to understand, oh, I can ask for help, not I need to wait until I'm asked if I need help, in a way. And like I said, we're with the students are with each other for about 9 years, but then when we reach middle school, we're with the same teachers for 3 years, and there's also a really important bond that's reached there. And I still go back to Bullen every once in a while, and I say hi to everyone, and it's incredibly important to me because, in a way, they were my family too. They still are. I still greatly consider them my family. I'm interested in how they're doing. They're interested in how I'm doing. I want to impress them like they're my aunts and uncles. And there's just a great feeling of comfort in a place of education where we are always bombarded with the idea, especially from children and students, that, oh, school's like a prison to me, or like, I hate going to school because I get so stressed out and everything sucks. I feel like I got really lucky because I had this, school was just another word for support system for me. And that's a lot thanks to the ability to have this sort of constantness.
I think Javi and I had the same impression that during the time we spent in Mr. Rocio's class this morning, that there was a, not a disrespectful, a very comfortable informality between teachers and students and the class as a whole, because they were all responding to Javi and making suggestions and saying, oh, so-and-so should ask that, and speaking directly to each other. And none of them gave me the impression that they didn't want to be in school.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's almost like hanging out still, just with learning involved. It's an odd way to put it, but I exactly knew what you meant about being in Mr. Osio's classroom. It was kind of like I saw myself in that chair again for a second when you were talking about the informality and the being able to just talk, and sends me down memory lane. I remember it was exactly like that when I was sitting there in that chair in that room. It's so easy, and almost in a way, like, you don't realize you're learning at that point because it becomes so much like, and that also contributes to the idea of language with context. It's so conversational because you're still speaking in Spanish usually in the class. I know Mr. Cio has that rule where he's like, as soon as you go into my classroom, it's Spanish. So in a way, it's a much easier language acquisition because you have the context of just having a regular conversation. We, 1 minute I might be learning about conjugating verbs, and the next minute I might be asking if we're going to be playing soccer after school, or, oh, how was your quinceañera, or what are you doing this weekend, and all completely in Spanish. So I feel like instead of it gives a whole new degree of learning the language.
One of the blessings that we have in our dual language program is we have the same kids for 6th grade, 7th grade, and 8th grade. So we really do get to build that team. Like, from the teacher's perspective, by the end of 6th grade, I can already kind of tell how you guys work together. You kind of understand how I teach. I understand how you learn best. In 7th grade, I see all these other teachers have to do a lot of community building, team building stuff the whole month of September, whereas the second week of school, I'm ready to start projects because I already know what you guys can do. You guys already are a team, and we can do a lot more higher level thinking skills and work on using Spanish in practical ways because you already have that foundation, which is a really nice program.
Yeah, I think giving confidence to the students is one of the most important things that language teachers have to do. There are many different students in front of us, many different kinds of characters. We have the ones that are very ready to answer every single question, no matter how they say it. They don't care if it's right or wrong. They don't think about it. This is just raise the hand immediately. Some others would never raise the hand. So is this dealing with, letting the chance to the one that wants to speak all the time to speak sometime, maybe at the beginning more than the others, but also letting the chance of the one that would never volunteer to speak, yes, when, you know, getting to know that person and see when he feels more comfortable or speaking about what things he feels more comfortable, then giving the opportunity of even asking him or her the question to give them the chance of, okay, now is it something you know, something you like, let's do it now. So a little by little they will feel that they're not as bad as they think they are sometimes, and so that would help them going through the communicative meaning of the language, even if they make mistakes. I mean, we all learn through mistakes. And I have this theory there is that all babies are born with two ears and one mouth. That means we have to listen twice as much as we have to speak. And also that when the babies are born, they don't speak any language, and they will take time until they produce a language, but they will produce it with mistakes. So it's natural that when you're learning a language, you make mistakes. And we shouldn't be worried about that. And there is at some point there in childhood when we are worried about the mistakes in front of the other people. And there is something that, you know, we feel ashamed of that, or it's a mistake, I'm bad. And trying to get rid of that kind of thinking, it's something that we have to do in the language classes.
We've been talking around about many of the aspects of the dual language program, and we didn't start by defining it in a structural sense, and that was intentional. But I wonder, maybe we've reached a point where at this point we talk about what is your mission statement, Nicole, and what is the makeup of the methodology and the goals and the structure of the program?
I mean, the prime mission really is to create bilingual, bicultural students at the end of this. And personally, as a middle school teacher, our goal is to have students ready so that way their sophomore year in high school, they could take AP Spanish and get ready to take college courses as juniors and seniors in high school, really to create students have a strong sense of self in Spanish. And so in our program, starting in elementary school, I believe it might have changed since my brother's been in it, but it was 90% in Spanish and 10% in English in kindergarten, and it goes up until you get to 50-50, and we try to stay there at the 50-50 mark, so half their content is in Spanish and half is in English. And for us, what we try to do is, at the end of elementary school, typically math and science are in Spanish, and then social studies is in English, and we flip-flop them when they get to middle school, for the sheer purpose of they get comfortable using both languages. So they're learning science terms in Spanish and then in English, so they can, one, see the bridge, how the two languages are related, especially in science, so many Latin terms.
That's it.
And then, two, just so that way they can see it in both languages. They become very comfortable code-switching between the two languages because they've had all their content in both languages.
And how large is the program?
By the time... About each grade, I would say, is about 50 to 60 students in it. By the time they get to middle school, sometimes some wean out because of transportation issues. So we're more at the low end of 50, high 40 by the time they get to sixth grade.
So maybe the total number of students...
don't make me do math.
No, just an approximately.
Yeah, I'd say roughly 500 students. That are currently in it.
That's larger than I thought. That's good. Are the plans to expand it or?
That's something that's always in talk, and fortunately, from the teacher ground point, we don't really get to know as much about what's going on with that. That's more something that's still with at the ESC through the dual language program.
I know that one of the things that has developed is that there is a strong. Enrollment from within families where once in friends, you know, by word of mouth, people becoming interested. But how do people get involved in this program? How do they get their kids involved? How do the kids?
It is a lottery system. So, and most people still find out about it through word of mouth, or their siblings have been in it, cousins have been in it, somebody in their neighborhood has. And so when they sign up, I want to say it might start at pre-K now, or it's still kindergarten, but once they sign up, it's a lottery, and they pick a certain amount of students, and you try to get a 50-50 split between monolingual Spanish and monolingual English, so that way each group is learning from the other.
Is there an option for older students to get involved?
There is. It's difficult, especially once you get to the older grades, because so much of that foundational Spanish has already been built. So if you started as a native English speaker, it's a little harder to enter in at that time.
I'm thinking maybe of someone who'd moved to the community with a third grade child, and they would hear about the program and get interested in it.
Most likely, if that happens, usually we would have them enter if they came from a different dual language school in a different district, or if they came from a Spanish-speaking country already, so that way we would have them enter into dual language because they already have that strong foundation in Spanish.
Now, let me just speak a little bit about my experience as a father as well. In my kid's school, which is different from the school where I work for, my kids are trilingual. I speak to them in English, and my wife speaks to them in Basque, and they learn the Spanish in the social life. My youngest one, who's now six, has been having the same class since he was 3 years old. And they did have this kind of immersion program where they would, according to the numbers of monolingual Basque natives kind of speakers, they would rank them in a class all together until they get to first grade. So in the stage of being 3, 4, 5 years old, they have been in the same class as native Basque speakers together. And then it comes to the first grade, they're going to get mixed with the other classes. The idea of that is just to encourage the use of the Basque language in the street. It was a language that was forbidden for 40 years, so it's in a process of being recovered and being socialized again. And so that is something that is getting lost. And there is a problem there with the use of the Basque language just restricted to the school, which is kind of an interesting topic now for many bilingual programs worldwide, where they only restrict the language to the use in the school, and how the Basque language has managed to recover the social use of the language when it was just about to be extinguished, kind of a thing. So they do that in my kids' school. And
it'd be interesting to have an Irish dual language teacher here, because they're trying to do the same thing with
that's right
with Gaelic.
With Gaelic, yeah.
We've got about 2.5 minutes left, and I'm wondering if anyone here has anything that they'd like to bring up that we haven't talked about yet.
Not kind of. I mean, just encourage the parents to get information they need, and once they do it, they might have their ups and goes about if they did the right choice, but at the end of the whole process, they did the right choice, for sure.
I turned out okay. So
we can always close with your story about gelato in Italy.
Oh.
Speaking Spanish.
Oh, that story. In fifth
we
grade.
We don't have to do it if you want. Go ahead.
Well, real quick. In fifth grade, I went to Italy for an ambassador program, and it was a lovely opportunity. But one day, we were able to walk around on our own. It was really fun. I was with a group of people, and we stopped by this gelato shop. And they only spoke Italian, but I could recognize some of the names. And I was like, I want chocolate gelato. So I walked up to him and I went, mi scusi, quiero gelato chocolate, por favor. And he understood enough. He understood Spanish. So he was like, of course. And he gave it to me. And it went well. And I was the star. And it was amazing. It was absolutely stellar. And just, I feel like it's a really good showing of, if I can do that in fifth grade, walk up with the confidence in a completely different country to be able to do this, imagine what I can do with the rest of my life with this.
Yeah, that's right. I think Nicole mentioned before, too, that the fact that when they swap the language in the learning of science, they realize that there are not so many differences in the technical language, and that sometimes the English and the Spanish are more similar than they thought they was. And that's true.
Okay, well, that's a great way to enter it on a happy story. My name is Mike Keough. I'm the producer host of this segment. Courtney has actually been the moderator for most of this segment, the de facto moderator. I'll be back in about a month with another program. In the meantime, there'll be somebody next week. Please join us on Education Matters. You can also join us on the Facebook site, WGTD Education Matters is the name for the Facebook site. And all of our programs are archived on WGTD.org. You go to the bottom of the page, you click on Shows. It gets you the selection of programs that we have, and you click on Education Matters, and it lists all of our programs there. And you just with the click of the button, you can access any show. So with that, we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
Support for WGTD comes from Carthage College, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. More information is available online at carthage.edu/grad.
This year's Jazz Rhythm and Blues Festival at Kenosha Harbor Park is Saturday, August 20th. Rebirth,